What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Blowing up big stocks and jacks. I'm Tim O. We got Ricky on the board. S&P futures are up. Somebody must have cleaned in here. Turned my volume way up. Oops. S&P futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 50. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Yeah, good morning.
How are you, bud?
I'm doing all right.
Does that mean you own some Dell stock?
No.
Up $116, or do you have a...
What's the big announcement for Dell that's making him rise up?
A $9.7 billion deal with the Defense Department.
Okay. Well, good for Dell.
Good for him. He's been sending money Trump's way since Trump's second term. Also, did you own any UMAC yesterday where the two Trump boys are on the board and they just got a huge drone contract from the Defense Department? This is I gotta get involved in this. I gotta get on the call line here.
Well, I think there actually is a much more pressing issue and we need to deal with it.
What would that be?
And the pressing issue is that I think we need to make arrangements for every time somebody uses the phrase sooner rather than later, that they get a beating.
Yes, I would agree with that.
The word soon is just fine. You don't need to say sooner rather than later. You sound like a damned idiot when you say it.
Or it is what it is. That's something that says nothing, too.
Well, it is what it is. That is a pretty shallow thing.
We get those every couple of years. There's been a new saying. Fortunately, they kind of slip away, usually. After overtime, and we get new ones. Just saying.
So there you have it. So there you have it. That's the more important thing, and I think now that we've dealt with that, and we've encouraged all of our listeners and egged them on to violence, then I think we're ready to address Friday.
Well, I think we need to get more violent. We have to teach these people that disagree with people that it's wrong. Like the lady was just, she's in charge of the Bureau of Engraving or something, whatever the hell that is, Kevin. Evidently, they're the ones that print the currency.
Mm-hmm.
She showed an objection to Trump's $250 bill with his picture on it, and she's been reassigned. I think she needs to go to like a gulag or something, be beaten, not just reassigned.
Was she reassigned because of that, or was there another reason given?
I
don't know the answer. So
coincidentally, let's put it this way, very coincidentally. So here's the thing: I want to get one of these phone calls, so I can
Next question: did she object to her boss, or did she publicly object?
I don't know. The word came out. It's, we have to understand now is that the idea with this UMAC company. You couldn't write fiction like this. Evidently, the two Trump boys owned a... And Lou's talked a lot about some of the people that are doing development for the Pentagon are not even... They're mom and pop companies. They're partnerships and stuff. So it's really hard. We ask them every now and then, are there some stocks, since we are stocks and jacks, are some stocks that maybe should be good buys? And his response always is that a lot of them are privately held, and that once in a while, like, other people buy them before we can, which is... And he sent out that thing of how many combinations... It's really startling. If you look at, like, since the 60s and 70s, how many combinations there have been in the defense industry. It's like hundreds of them. But anyway, the two Trump boys owned a golf club manufacturer that evidently was a corporation and had shares outstanding. So they go to these guys, whoever owned this UMAC, and they say, we should merge because now you have a public company. So they merge. They put at least one of the Trump whatevers on the board, and sure enough, they get this huge drone contract with the Defense Department, which maybe they would have gotten anyway. I don't know. And evidently, the some people have reported, and you know who the hell are they, that the phone calls going back and forth between the White House and Defense Department of how important this contract was, there were a lot of calls. Now, evidently from yesterday, now what I know now is that the real problem here is that we know about the calls. Because we want everybody to sign this document saying you can't say anything about stuff like that. Because I've never seen anything on this level like this. But this is very.
What's the compensation for a board advisory board member? I'm just curious as to.
I was on a board once. I didn't get squat. So, but
this is advisory board. So it's not board of directors. It's an advisory board, which is different. And I don't know. Is this a public? So I'm just looking at it right now, and I'm just not. I don't have much information behind it, other than questions that I'm asking as I go, because I think it's I like to get the whole story before I.
Well, we're never going to get the whole story. The fact is, the stock moves the day before, or the 2 days before these contracts are let, then they're up huge, and guess what? From where I'm coming from, I can't change any of this stuff, right? But we used to have a lovely lady on the show, unfortunately passed, young Holly Norwick, who hated it. She's like you, Kevin. She hated the term stock picker's market. She thought that made absolutely zero sense to anybody. But she says, it's always a stock picker's market. If the market's going up, it's easier to pick stocks because they're all going up. But she hated the term. I wonder if we could pull her out of the grave right now. It really is a stock picker's market, because every day there is a stock that is essentially picked by the government. And yep. I've never seen, I don't know if she'd want to use a new term or what, but clearly in the last week, if you don't own UMC, Dell, IBM, you can retire, for God's sake. we're not talking about chump change here. Dell's up 100, I got up $116 today. It's trading 433. That's a number.
By the way, a little bit more. The compensation for advisory board members is restricted stock.
Okay, and the stock's up.
That vests over a 6-month period. So there's my answer.
Which is worse than a salary, right? If you're involved.
And most directors. Well, there are companies that have rather substantial director compensation too, but. But yeah, there's your answer right there. So yeah, they should not be holding stock. They're, technically, they're no different than any other private citizen, but of course they're not. So that's at best that's a bad look, and at worst it's a corrupt arrangement.
Kevin, I don't want. Someday, maybe, who knows, this group will be out, maybe in our lifetime, maybe not. I really don't want to spend 4 years going after people. I think that would be so counterproductive. I just wish they'd stop doing this shit. I don't want them to do it, and I don't want to have to go after them afterward. What a waste of time. Isn't it, on both sides?
Well, yeah.
What a waste of time and effort, for God's sake. For people to be crooks, then have to go after the crooks. It's horrible enough to shoot somebody. It's even worse to waste how many hours to go get the guy, convict him, and throw him in jail. What an absolute waste of society. The whole mess is, isn't it? On every level.
Well, but if we don't put people in jail for
I know.
Then they're going to continue to break the law, because if we just fine people. Then that's the cost of doing business. No big deal.
Problem is, the shooter can't pardon himself. Aren't these guys already been pardoned?
Who's been pardoned?
Well, their tax audits have been pardoned, right? The Trump kids. He's going to pardon everybody before he leaves.
Well, past audit. don't even bring up pardons.
I think they should have to have some kind of a pardon board. I don't think the president should have that power, to be honest with you, but.
No. Okay.
I think the issue.
But that was part of the settlement with the IRS. There was also a $10 million award, which Trump said don't want the $10 million. Instead, here's what I want, and that's where you got that.
There was never a case because those people work for him, for God's sake.
They didn't work for him back when they were when they illegally released the tax returns of him and thousands of other people in the Trump organization.
Well, he's not worried about the other thousands of people, is he?
Apparently, he was because he sued on their behalf.
All right, whatever. Hey, I don't know if you had a chance to listen in yesterday. What did you think of the conversation with Lou regarding the... I'm anxious to have Carl on today because he was talking about how he thought...
Bring it up. Carl can jump in. He's on.
Well, the idea that that some of the universities can just decide to sell off like profitable football programs and stuff. And Carl was saying that you can't just do that. And Lou says, "Yeah, you can." So I don't know if it's been tested or if that's even covered in the law or what. I don't know.
Not knowing the specific law, and I can let Carl chime in on that. But from my point of view, you probably have the ability to sell off the assets, just like any not-for-profit would be able to sell off some of its assets. The question is that a taxable sale? Is it a taxable event? How is it a taxable event? And who's on the hook for it? So. You know, that would be my question, but
define asset. I mean,
any not-for-profit should be able to sell off its assets, and they do it all the time.
Okay, but I'm going to say, what do you mean when you say asset? And when I say this, if Holy Name Cathedral has a huge parking lot that they're not using, and somebody wants to put a high-rise there. I think they can sell off the parking lot. I'm with you. But if you have a, let's say, a football team or a store or something that has been growing money for years, non-taxable, can you sell off that and the profits made from it? I don't know about that. I mean, I'm asking. I don't know. That's kind of a different... When you say asset, you're talking about a piece of property. I'm talking about a going concern. Are they synonymous, I guess, is my question.
Well, okay. So if you're a nonprofit and you have an asset you don't need anymore, you can sell the asset, but the funds from the sale have to stay within the nonprofit. Okay. Now, there has to... what you can't have, generally speaking, within a nonprofit... with relatively few exceptions, is retained earnings. That's
You're talking about a nonprofit. Let's get our terms correct. You're talking about a nonprofit as in a church. You're not talking about a not-for-profit like an exchange.
I'm talking about something within the 501c umbrella.
Would that be a Catholic church or a university?
C3 is an educational. I mean, that's kind of the thing, is it has to be educational in focus.
So University of Illinois is a C3.
I would assume so. I haven't looked it up, but okay. I would assume it is. But because you're a nonprofit. It doesn't mean that you don't have things that you don't require anymore. I mean, that happens all the time, right? I mean, you know, in the for-profit world, it happens all the time, too. We had equipment that was obsolete, and, I mean, it was a lot of fun during the internet years because nobody give you anything for it, which had all kinds of interesting implications with regards to the depreciation schedules and things like that. But... yeah, I mean, you try to sell it. It's like anything else. Where it becomes a problem is if that gain or those funds end up effectively converted to private use. Now, that is illegal. Like, that you cannot do.
Okay, how do you define that?
Well, that's where the game playing...
Okay, so let's keep, if we can, on the theme, because I think what's going on, Kevin, and kick me for, is... somebody's lobbing out the idea that the university, the SEC was the one that floated this, right? University of Alabama is going to somehow split off the football program, the basketball program, or some combination of either just football or a couple other, maybe baseball and basketball, that make money, and they're going to split that off into something else. And they're going to be a 20% increase or a injection from, you know, Carl Inc. or BlackRock or somebody. So now,
private equity investment that comes with it.
And so now it's going to be 80% owned by maybe all the management shares are going to be with the private equity, but, you know, some part of the profit is still going to go back to the University of Alabama. Now, that profit, now I'm guessing, is no longer tax deductible or tax free. I don't know. I mean, how is this all going to work, I guess, is my question.
Well,
and do they get a, do they get to keep the stadium that was built with non-tax funds?
There's a lot of you know, corner level questions that, and of course, it's not corner level when you think about the amount of money involved, right? In theory, a building doesn't depreciate in value, right? I mean, in theory.
Well, a stadium probably doesn't, but.
Well, right. I mean, a stadium is built and then it depreciates.
It does in that at some point it becomes decrepit, but it's very long term proposition.
Well, yeah, but you spend the money on it, and then it like everything else in the world, it's subject to entropy. It requires upkeep and maintenance and such, or it turns into dust.
I'm not talking about the expense side of that, Carl. I'm talking about it. At some point, it's a teardown.
Right. Exactly. And so, essentially, the essence though of this is that there's, for all intents and purposes, a very large gain that comes out of this sale, right? I mean, that's sort of why you do it. I think the bigger question is, if we're turning collegiate teams into essentially the NFL.
That's right where we're headed.
Well, I understand. Yeah. I'm saying that's a for-profit enterprise, right? I mean, nobody jokes about that and says that's not for profit. My issue with that
actually,
is,
by the way, the NFL itself, the league, is not a C, but it's a not for profit like the CBOE was.
Well, yeah, but the teams themselves are for-profit enterprises.
Yep.
Now, the issue that I have with all of this is, let's say they do this kind of a thing, up here at UT, the land that Neyland sits on and the structures around it, those have a extraordinary amount of tax exemption that has accumulated over the years.
Not to interrupt what I just did. What if it's a land grant school? The land was gifted.
Well, there's part of it too, right? Yeah. But I mean, that's one of the things that comes up, is that there's, as an example and a smaller version of it, there is a church that it's been part of UT, pretty much forever, right?
So UT, you're talking University of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just being for everybody.
Yeah, here in Knoxville. Okay. The school wants it, and other people want it, but the question becomes, how does all of this end up playing out over time? Because and there's some fighting going on, because the archdiocese, it's Catholic, and then they kind of sort of like, well, wait a minute, at what price, right? But the tax implications on this stuff are
also goes into Title IX. It goes into all kinds of other stuff that Kevin knows more than we do.
Yeah, but all of this stuff is really chaps my backside, because essentially these programs have gone from being part of the part of the nonprofit piece of a university into. When I was chief, when I was of college age, nobody thought anything big about the football program being a profit center for Christ's
sake. Well, you were limited, Kevin, help me. You were limited to a maximum of two times a year on Channel 7, right? I mean, every team could only, the Irish were always on with Southern Cal, and it was one other game. But nobody could be on more than twice, right, Kevin?
Once upon a time, yeah, there was a NCAA limited, and the intent of that was, of course, to because national TV was a very scarce resource before cable days, and they wanted to make sure that that more than a handful of schools got access to that kind of exposure. Obviously, that ship sailed a long time ago because we have so much broadcasting bandwidth now that everybody, every game for every team can be on television.
Well, I remember the Irish, just because I know the history of other teams have the same sort of history. They had not gone to a bowl game since the Rose Bowl in, Kevin, 1928, something like that. And they went to the Cotton Bowl in 1970. And the only way they justified it, the total take was $300,000, and they made a special pot for minority scholarships with the $300,000. $300,000 was the total take. And they had not been to a bowl game in what, Kevin, 45 years, 44 years?
Since 45 Rose Bowl.
Was it the 45 Rose Bowl? I thought it was like the 20-something Rose Bowl.
You're probably right. I think it might have been the 25 Rose Bowl. Nevertheless, it was a long, long time ago.
And there weren't very many bowls. And your take was not that much, right? And, well, now all of a sudden, the money keeps piling on up. But I don't know. Kevin, do you have any idea how... I mean, the University of Illinois, we know, was a land-grant school. When Father Soren showed up, and nobody lived there. So, I don't know what he... How did they get the property in the first place? Who'd they even buy it from?
They just staked out a claim. The way the story goes is that there were a bunch of explorers, including some Holy Cross priests, that were traveling across northern Indiana, or what eventually would become Indiana, and in a really bad winter storm blew up, so they decided to pitch camp right where they were, and everybody agreed that they would leave when the weather improved.
Kyle, there's two nice lakes there, so it's actually a nice spot. But yeah, they're still there. The weather has never improved.
The weather never got better, right?
Actually, the weather these last couple of days in here has been glorious. It's been some of the best days going.
Talk about weird history. It's right next to the St. Joe River, which runs between the Notre Dame campus and the St. Mary's campus. Well, actually, it's the other side of St. Mary's, but...
Runs up to Lake Michigan, comes down through Michigan into South Bend, and then turns back to the north and goes back into Michigan. So it runs to the southeast from Lake Michigan, and then gets all the way to South Bend, and then it turns and goes northeast and back into through Elkhart and back into Michigan, which is why the town is named South Bend. It is at the south bend of the river.
Well, the other...
Learn something on this show every damn day.
Well, the other historical anecdote is when Father Marquette showed up in Chicago, because I think the lake was a little higher back then, but he looked at the Chicago River, which drains into the lake, and the Des Plaines River, which is only 5 miles away, which drains into the Mississippi, into the, obviously, the Gulf. So everybody wanted to connect the Great Lakes with the Mississippi. And there was a big determination for a while as to whether you should use the St. Joe River, pop into the Kankakee River, which flows, for those that don't know, the Illinois is formed by the Kankakee River and the Des Plaines River matching, coming together down in, where, near Joliet, south of Joliet someplace. So there was a determination that Chicago would be the portage site, and they built the I&M Canal. But for a while, Northern Indiana was in play, Kevin. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it was. I don't even know where you would put the canal between the St. Joe and Kankakee River, but somewhere there's a spot where you could have dug a canal and connected to the Mississippi that way instead of using the Chicago portage. But they decided to do the Chicago portage, the I&M Canal, which, when that was finished, was almost like the same year that the Board of Trade opened, because now they two connected, and Chicago became Chicago. Until before then, St. Louis was way bigger. But South Bend, if that's where the canal was, Kevin, I don't know where they would have started it, that would have been Chicago.
They probably decided to go where they went because there was no really good place to put a football stadium in Indiana.
That's probably the case. But Father Marquette, being the good explorer that he was here during high season, I guess, and he thought that the I&M Canal would have to be something like, what, 3 or 4 miles, Kevin? Turned out being, what, 40?
Yeah.
Or 50? To get to a spot in the Illinois River that was deep enough for the barges. The barges weren't very big. But, Carl, you wouldn't want to have been on that group. They still find booze bottles from the Irish guys that dug that thing. It was dug by hand. Well, it was dug by hand. How would you like to dig a canal by hand through a swamp? It's one thing if you say, okay, this is nice dry ground. It's hard enough to dig there. But what if it was a swamp? How the hell do you dig in a swamp by hand?
Well, you know, the chief, what goes along with it, since you bring up swamps, the latest screaming from the climate change idiots is that New Orleans is going to be overwhelmed by rising sea level waters. Well, actually, yes, New Orleans is going to be overwhelmed, but not by rising sea level waters. It's by subsiding ground, which, by the way, was the case when it was built, long before there were suburbans.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, having lived on the Gulf Coast for 20 years and having put in a dock shortly after I bought the house, that if there's any sea level change, and by the way, there's very small tidal range there too, which makes it easy to figure out whether or not there really is.
Just for grins, the further you go to the equator, the less the tidal wave, right? The tidal.
No, it's actually that's a factor, but that's not the whole story. Okay, it's really weird the way it ends up working out. It's very odd.
I know it's huge up at Cape Cod. I was there once, and it's like six feet at least.
Oh yeah, no, it is huge, but the range over on the Atlantic side is considerably more than it is in general than it is in areas along the Gulf, which is kind of strange because you wouldn't think at the same latitude that there would be any difference, right? I mean, but and by the way, all of these buckets are connected together, so you know, over any period of time, there is no difference because, I mean, you can run that experiment anytime you'd like with however many buckets you'd like to hook together with a hose. But in fact, when it comes to tidal range, there is a substantial difference. And where I used to live, it's only about a foot.
Okay.
So what that means is that, you know, if I've got my pilings driven into the ground underneath the water, and I pylocked them, so which a lot of people don't do. It's extra money, but that also prevents storms from lifting them, and you know, then you end up with the twisted thing, right? Which is bad because you can't buy insurance on docks generally. So any damage from Mother Nature, you get to pay to have fixed. So Mr. Engineer says, "Well, I'm going to do what I can to not have any damage, and therefore not have to pay to fix it." That was a successful strategy, but what it also meant was I could look at where the water lines were and where the barnacles grew and, you know, oysters on the poles and then this and that and the other thing. And I can tell you over the space of 20 years, there was, for all intents and purposes, zero change in sea level. And by the way, if you think that's just me being crazy, you can go over to the Destin Bridge, which has a clearance gauge, because the clearance there is 50 feet for real. If you have a 52-foot stick on your sailboat, you will not clear.
Yeah, well, that's not good.
Well, I mean, you know, by the way, the current rips through there, too. If you find out the hard way, that's really bad. But that clearance gauge, I assure you the bridge has not moved. in the years since it was built.
You know, you brought up real quick, because I want to get back to some of these stock valuations, but I was reading this thing yesterday that when the late Bill Moriarty, but I'm going to his funeral thing next week. That's going to be sad. Good friend. But anyway, Bill talked about some areas I didn't even know this. I guess I should have, but you either have people get water, there's either surface water or underground water.
Right.
And he was talking about in Texas, some of it's surface water, and some areas it's underground water. And I was reading yesterday about a couple of serious dams in Texas are actually sinking.
Yeah.
Now, is that, obviously Hoover Dam, they went down to the bedrock. some dams they don't do that? Or I mean, or is, I would think if you're at the bedrock's not going to sink, is it? Or but what's sinking?
The bedrock generally won't, but land is not necessarily fixed. I mean, a lot of people think it is.
If you pull the water out from under it, you got a problem, or oil, right?
Well, exactly, and that's to a large degree, you know, where some of these risks come from, Chief, is that you have a lot of people that think that these resources are infinite. We've, especially west of the Mississippi, no, they're not. And the recharge rate of these aquifers in particular is very slow.
But if you have even a small aquifer anywhere near where you want to build a dam, can you go to the bedrock if there's an aquifer there? All you do is hit water, aren't you?
Well, if you go far enough down, you can find stability. And usually when you put a dam in, Hoover Dam in particular, but most others.
Well, they found springs down there, and they had to plug the springs.
Oh yeah, but what you're going to is not just the bottom. You need the anchoring points on the sides.
Okay.
Right. So because that's what's actually, dam is essentially an inverted semicircle shape with the inside shape facing the water, right? So the water pressure tends to push that into the bedrock and outward slightly, which helps lock everything in place. Good God, you don't want it to be the other way.
Oh no, I am. Well, hey, what's these? You know, we talked a little bit, and you know, obviously it's a political deal when people get these kind of contracts. But
no, really?
Well, but even so, you can. You could give some, there's two things with this. One is the fact that somebody got it, okay, but the other is, what's the price? I mean, if there's a war going on, and well, we're always war going on. If there's a war going on, and the Kevin Carl Chief Group gets destroyer engines, but oh, by the way, we put in a pretty serious clean bid. Maybe we goose somebody to be favored, but if it's the right price, I honestly don't care that much. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, but the if it's a competitive price, but if it's a competitive price, the stock shouldn't go up 25-30% in one day. I mean, question is,
well, Chief, that's I think you've hit that, okay, which of course nobody thinks is a big deal in the world today. All right, this thing that just happened with Dell screams corruption.
Well, it does, but I'm saying if it's negotiated, if it's a real price, somebody had to get it.
Well, okay, somebody had to get it, but the stock wouldn't go up 30%.
I understand. Well, I guess what I'm saying is, does the market know what the three of us are now talking about?
Well, obviously, or the price wouldn't have gone up 30%.
Well, I'm saying, I just read this thing about the reflecting pool, all right? And, yeah. It looked pretty dirty when I was there.
There's another one,
okay,
right?
But what I'm saying, the estimate was for $1.8 million. I'm reading some article. Who the hell knows? Well, it turns out it's up to 13 something.
Right.
And the person doing it has a 20% profit on top, which is really high for something like that. And oh, by the way, they had a 20% overhead rate to start with. So right. we're talking about these guys are going to make $4 million on something that was originally going to cost $1.8 million. Well, does Dell have that kind of contract, or if they have one that somebody hammered them? Nose to the grindstone, and if it's a real contract, I honestly don't give a crap if Dell got it.
Well, Chief, okay.
But I mean, I don't know.
Well,
I'm suspecting, but...
Well, I do from the reaction in the market.
Well, I'm saying, okay, how does the market know? Are they assuming corruption? They must be.
Well, the market has the outlines in the deal. Yeah, I mean, the deal was published. Right?
Okay, what are the details? I didn't see that. The details were
published. I don't have the exact details, but it was, okay. I mean, the government is buying X things for Y dollars, right? I mean, okay, people in the market. Now, there's another possibility, all right, other than just plain old-fashioned rank corruption. Although at this point I'm cynical enough that my assumption
I think it is too.
I think it's just plain old-fashioned rank corruption. On the other hand, you know, If you want to talk about rank corruption, how about a guy that has a couple hundred gold bars in his basement, works for the CIA, and oh, by the way, has been doing it for a while, all of his credentials were fake, and the guy's got a TS clearance.
Good.
Now, and incidentally, with SCI.
But even Trump's kids with the drones, if the drone drones cost them $1,000 to make, and they're selling them for $1,100, I don't care. It's a fair deal, but I get the feeling it's not. I mean, how can I prove that?
Why do I think the drones cost $1,000 to make and are being sold for $10?
Well, that I'm trying to be fair here. I'm saying there is a possibility of somebody you know getting a deal and the deal being an okay deal. There is a possibility.
There's another possibility right now, Chief, which does not implicate corruption, but we'll find out. And in a couple of years, we'll know the truth. Of course, by that time, you know, nobody will care anymore. If you look at what's going on with this insanity over AI in the present tense, and then you take a look at, as an example, a unnamed large company, although I'm pretty sure I know who it is now, because the name wasn't released, but I'm pretty sure I know who it is, blew $500 billion on $500 billion or $500 million. I know there's a big difference between those two. An absolutely astronomical amount of money on.
How do you even spend that AI. Much? Good Lord.
Well, because every query you put into an AI consumes tokens. Okay. And this is, and the corruption of this model and the reason the AIs, everyone says they
define tokens.
Okay. All right. So every node, the way that these models are designed is obviously somebody's got to get paid. Otherwise, they won't exist, right?
Okay.
Well, I mean,
I understand somebody, you know,
there's got to be a billing meter somewhere, right? All right. So the way it works is that when I ask a question of an AI on a commercial system, the AI counts up all of the nodes it must examine and all of the computations it must make, and each of them ticks a meter, kind of like your taxi meter ticks either from time or mileage, right? And that's how you're billed, and that's what you pay for. This sounds more like okay, and it kind of sort of is at a certain point, because obviously that, you know, that has to take place. But the problem here is that this particular firm blew an astronomical amount of money and got essentially nothing in terms of return on investment. And there are now enough independent studies out there on the ROI, which in a public company, this ain't all that hard to figure out, because what happened to your revenue line, what happened to your profit margin line, what happened to, you know, all this stuff is reported every quarter, right? And the ROI for all of these firms under the most optimistic set of assumptions is deeply negative. In most cases, we're talking about 80-90% losses. The only exception so far that has been seen, again, under very optimistic assumptions, because you can't get inside the corporation enough to be able to be any more accurate than that, so you can either be in the middle, you can be optimistic, you can be pessimistic. It's like a business plan, right? But under the most optimistic assumptions, the only company that's made any money off of this in terms of adopting AI has been Amazon, and that is an extremely small, like a 10% net gain, right? Which is, I mean, and under optimistic assumptions, God, that's tiny, the amount of money involved here. Boy, if you're wrong on those assumptions, it's a huge loss. You're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars potentially going up in smoke. So this charade. And this is what I've pointed out since this thing starts. You got 5 watts of human of energy expenditure in a human brain at best being used for intellectual production of whatever it is you produce.
Is that what Kevin and I produce, intellectual production?
Well,
don't do that. Sorry, don't do an election.
You don't want me to go there on the air. Yeah, exactly.
You saying when even when Kevin's teaching, he never nudges up to 6 watts.
Well, no, I'm saying that the entire brain only uses 20, and most of it is used to make sure that you breathe. it, facts are facts. But the problem here is that these things, the energy consumption, the physical plant that's necessary to support them, all of, if you think about where this starts, just as a basic example, in 20 hours, I can take the average 16-year-old kid and give him enough, impart enough to him to be able to hand him a 2-ton automobile, and the DMV will license that 16-year-old kid to drive that thing on a public street. And the reason we allow this is because 99.9% of the time he's successful in operating the vehicle, not hitting anything, killing people. All right. He does this using 5 watts at 20 hour, or across 20 hours. All right, 100 watts, a tenth of a kilowatt of power, or about 2 cents worth of electrical energy at Tennessee prices.
Yeah, but it's really a lot more hamburgers, though.
Well, but guess what? Most of that isn't going to the intellectual capacity to drive the car.
True.
Okay? All right? Most of it's going to other things. Maybe his girlfriend gets some of it. But on the other hand, Elon...
Dave Barry on that one.
Well, yeah.
But keep going.
But so Elon has spent gigawatt hours at his data centers training a car how to operate by itself. In other words, without the human. All right? Think about the insanity of this. And then on top of that, after he does the training, initially, one of his Teslas literally drove under a tractor trailer that was pulled across the highway in Florida and killed the guy inside who was watching a DVD rather than driving.
Oh, God.
I cut his head off. And the reason it did it was that it could not infer on its own that that was dangerous. Now, the average 16-year-old with that 20 entire hours of operating experience knows damn well if he drives under the trailer, he's going to lose his head. All right? Therefore, he doesn't do it. The car did not know this. Now, of course, today it does because, you know, this got fed into the data. But this is the difference. The machine does not ever actually infer anything. The reason they hallucinate is because the prime directive of all commercial systems is to consume tokens. That's if it comes back and says, I don't know, it doesn't get paid. And so if you ask it something that has 15 analytical steps in order to produce an answer, and it has in its corpus of information 14 of the 15. So the 14 are easy. It's an index lookup. It finds it. It's there. The 15th one isn't in the system. It's going to make it up.
Well, we have people that do that.
I get that, Chief. But it's not actually intelligent. You know you made it up.
And when you're making something up, you understand, at least intuitively, you have some understanding of the risk that's involved in your decision, in what you choose to do.
Yeah.
So you can make something up, but you're not likely to make up, what the hell, I'll just drive under this truck.
Yeah. Hey, quick question.
That gets you to things like, you know, Waymo, which is, you know, that's all built on an artificial intelligence engine. And Waymo, for anybody who doesn't know, is the driverless cab system. I saw a bunch of them when I was in Phoenix a couple months ago. And it's very unnerving when you're driving down the highway and you look at the car next to you and it doesn't have any driver in it, just a passenger.
Well,
what if you flip them off? Is there a camera?
Well, I don't know.
There's a lot of cameras.
So does it know it's been flipped off?
Well, yeah, I'm sure it does. But, you know, Chief, just a few days ago, Atlanta had some localized street flooding, and they actually shut it down because it wasn't capable of dealing with that.
Yeah, hey, yeah, do either of you guys have a question from out of the blue here?
Carl, drive over the water.
Do either of you guys ever heard of this outfit? I should know. They're in a transportation average, EXPD, Expeditors International of Washington. These guys are up 20% this morning, up 30%. But these earnings moves or these announcement moves are they're 2 and 3 times. I mean, Dell had earnings last night. I think their straddle was, I'm thinking, $32, maybe $40, and the stock moved to 110.
You know, one of the interesting, you know, there's an interesting aspect to that though, Chief, which is that so you know, NVIDIA just had its earnings announcement, right?
They didn't go anywhere.
And well, yeah, and I was looking at the, you know, at the possibility of essentially a collar, all right, because I had a pretty good idea which way it might go. The IV on that was off the rack. Okay,
their straddle is not that big though, considering that stock.
No, it wasn't. But
the straddle is, if the stock's trading 215, the straddle is the at the money call and at the money put. You just got to define that once in a while.
Right, but what I was looking at doing was essentially a collar, so you know a spread.
Right.
Okay. And the maximum that I could manage to get out of that, assuming that I was right on the directional move, was not worth it. It was absolutely not worth it. And if I bought the straddle, I would have lost money because it didn't move as much as you know as it would have cost me.
But if this. Where's Russell when I need him? For 30-some years of me being in the business, if you would have probably sold every straddle going into earnings, now granted, you had some, you got somewhere to sun don't shine. Overall, I think you might, I shouldn't say this because if I do, people will say that options are mispriced. They're not, but the thing of it is, most people can't be selling a straddle. I'm not going to let anybody do it here. And I'm not going to do it for anybody.
Well, yeah, because the risk is unlimited.
Right, the risk is unlimited. So maybe there's a slight tinge to the sellers making more than the buyers over time. I'm going to say, because we do these earnings plays all the time, in the last 2 years, I'm going to say you wanted to be long those straddles.
The thing is, it depends on which ones. Right now, you know, I'm
well. Yeah,
I'm not,
which ones, duh?
Well, right, but this is the basic problem. Okay, is that I'm not, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I'm not BlackRock, right, or
right.
You know, or Goldman or whatever, right? So I'm not going to be able to sit out there and put 20 of these things on a day when earnings are coming out, and you know, equal delta them, you know, essentially try not to get caught with my pants down in terms of having more exposure in one place than another, whatever, have you know, have some balance to the way I do it, because otherwise mathematically you get wrong on one of them, you're going to get destroyed, and so that's that's just out of the realm of things. So I have to target the things that I'm interested in trying to play. But when I looked at that one, I was like, no, thank you. You know, and as it turned out, buying that one would have been a loser. So I was glad I didn't do it. I don't know. I just some of these, like the Dell, the problem with the Dell thing is the same problem with the kind of rank corruption that you've seen in the QM contract. That has been ridiculously evident.
Okay, but I don't want to beat this up, but if it was actually a fair deal, it's how can I use the term? It's a little corrupt. But if whatever they're buying from them, if it costs them $100 to make and they're paying $500, well, that's, you know, I'll use my Catholic upper. That's a mortal sin, you know. But if it costs them $100 and you're paying them $105, you know, somebody's got to get the contract.
I don't have a problem with that, Chief. The problem with trying to figure out which is the case in this situation.
We suspect with the current group and with the groups before them, for whatever reason, that somehow or another it's not legit.
Well, I suspect that as well.
Okay. I don't think Obama's wife's friend's contract with the software for the Obamacare wasn't legit.
I'm saying is that in a market that is behaving the way this one is, I'm less certain of that, because companies that are not involved in that kind of deal, all right, that just come out with an earnings report, they don't have a contract with a government-linked whatever, all right, there isn't, that's not part of the announcement. And the reactionary move that comes out of it is absolutely flat out bananas.
Yeah.
All right.
To be blunt, I don't think Trump's kids are going to spend a bunch of time making $100 a drone. They're going to want to make more than that. That's just what they have all kinds of things they can do with their time. One of them is not a fair return on drones.
You're probably right.
One other aspect to these deals too, and that is, do they have the ability to deliver?
Right.
And that's, you know, and Dell I'm sure does. I don't doubt that. You know, they may screw it up, but I don't think they probably won't. And that's one of the differences with the Obama thing you mentioned is not only did they get the contract, they didn't have the ability to deliver.
Well, Kevin, was it you that told me that some of the best software ever sold had yet to be made yet or something?
Yeah, well, vaporware is common. You know, Carl knows that term.
But Chief, this is the big problem within the current paradigm. Okay. Is that not only is essentially all of this vaporous at best, because if the machine supposedly is going to take over from the human, then, and that's the argument being made, then number one, it has to be at least as accurate as the human, otherwise it's worthless.
Yeah.
And secondly, it has to be cheaper. All right, because otherwise, again, it's worthless. Why would you pay more for the same thing? That's stupid. Nobody would do that. So, therefore, it has to meet those two tests. It doesn't. And therefore, the entire thing is vaporous crap.
Yeah. Well, hey, just an anecdotal story. There was I sort of know how this is supposed to work because of my Pullman experience. There was a guy Pullman hired named Bob Long. Talk about a strange-looking dude. The guy was probably 5'8", but if he would have had any neck whatsoever, he'd have been about 5'11". His head sat right on his shoulders. It was like no neck, and the guy was even put together that way. Anyway.
Remember Walter Williams on the White Sox?
Yeah, well, we used to call him No Neck, which was...
His nickname was No Neck, and yeah, it's like his head was just, you know, plunked on his shoulder blade.
Well, they hired this guy as a program manager, right? And, I'm sitting there. His office wasn't that far down from where I was sitting. And I see these guys hauling in all these books. And I go, what in God's name is all that stuff? Well, 2 days after the guy's in there, there's books and stuff all over his office. I mean, the racks and racks and racks. And I go in and I introduce myself, and I was a financial program manager. And he's a real nice guy. We sit down and we start BSing. And he's looking, and he says, I got to bring in all these books. These are all projects I've worked on. And he goes, if you're going to be a program manager, you're going to go out for bid. He said, you better have already priced out everything in that bid and better know exactly what that price could come in at, or you're going to screw yourself every which way but Sunday. He said, if you don't know that the Dan Ryan Expressway repair project for this 20 miles of pavement, if you don't know exactly where that bid should come in, you got no business in the business. And all these books, if I go through them, I can come up with that bid. He goes, you got two things running against you. He goes, the first is... If somebody overbids, he goes, well, that's the obvious. And you go, nah, I'm not doing that. He goes, but you're really in trouble if somebody underbids. Because he didn't do it right, and somewhere along the line he's going to screw you, and you don't know where. He goes, right. That's when you got to go over to the guy, take him into another room, nobody there, and say, hey, idiot, how did you come up with, you know, $1 million a mile when it has to be $1,000,001 just on material? What are you doing? Because I don't want to find out 10 years later that he didn't use the rebar because he was saving money. He goes,
right.
You got to walk through it, and you got to tell the guy where he screwed up in his bid and let him resubmit it. Because otherwise, I don't think, how much of this stuff is going on? I think the Pentagon is set up to do that, but how much, I guess the real question we're dancing around, is how much does a call from the White House stop that process.
And well, part of the, yeah, except part of the problem, Chief, all right, so warfare has always been an asymmetric game, okay? This isn't a new thing by a stretch of the imagination. The first guy that came up with a bow and arrow did some damage, right, to the guys that didn't have it. And we've seen examples of this. When the whole Bosnia thing was going on, these guys figured out that they could take an old microwave, a $50 microwave oven, put it out in the middle of the street with a long extension cord on it, put a stick in the door switch, and anti-radiation missiles, because of the frequencies that those things operate on to cook your food, would think that was a targeting radar and would lock onto it, blow it up. Well, okay, so you're spending $1 million on an anti-radiation missile to blow up somebody's $50 target, right, that they put in the middle of the road for you. This ends very badly, quite rapidly, if you're the person with the $1 million missiles. Not only do you not kill any of the bad guys, you run out of missiles. Right? Now, and we should have learned from this when this stuff became very evident over in Ukraine. The Ukrainians were using extremely cheap first-person drones, and to avoid jamming problems, they were using thin spools of optical cable, which, by the way, the stuff is littered all over the place now over there. That's going to be a real bastard to clean up because it's environmentally fairly nasty. You'd think not, because it's inert.
I bet all kinds of animals are getting caught and everything.
Well, it's extremely thin, so it's very friable, but that makes it 100 times worse in terms of, you know, screwing with cropland and stuff like that. But the problem with this is again, I've got a tank that cost, you know, $1 million. I've got a bunch of armor on it, and here comes the $5,000 drone that blows it up, because all it needs is a small shape charge if you can get it down the hatch or in the right place, right? So this is the nature of these things, and you see the same sort of thing going on right now with Iran. Iran has a bunch of very cheap drones that cost basically nothing, and individually they're not even slightly difficult for our fleet guys to blow up on the way in before they hit a ship, okay? It's not even slightly hard. Now, launch 1,000 of them at once, and there's a problem, all right? Because, yeah, I can hit them. I just can't hit them fast enough. And if one of those things manages to get into the hangar hatch, the hangar deck elevator area of an aircraft carrier that's got planes in it and fuel and munitions, oh, God.
Yeah, it's right.
Well, yeah, I mean, you might not sink it, but you're really going to screw it up. So the thing is that this has always been the nature of warfare. It's not a new problem, and it's not a new thing. And yet, here we are with our procurement system and the defense contractors and all of this stuff. We spend billions and billions of dollars on stuff that we think is a strategically important thing, and somebody comes along with what amounts to a pea shooter that they can make an enormous size, and it's the same thing that happens if you go up against somebody that has, they have an army of 100,000 dudes, and you've got 1 million, you're going to win. All right, now you may take hideous losses in the process of doing it, but you are eventually going to be able to kill 100,000 of those guys. And when you do, you win. So this is part of the essence of it. And the commercialized nature of military procurement pretty much ensures that we and other nations that use this model are always going to be behind that ball.
Well, you end up fighting the last war. Hey, before we still have Kevin. Kevin, we opened the conversation here, and Carl came in, and we were talking about the law regarding these teams that are conferences are leaving, but I guess I don't know what got me on this theme. Lou probably did, but if the SEC decides they want to do this in 10 teams or 12 teams or whatever, is there another side? I mean, who they just decided, but who's going to say no? Who's going to say yes? I mean, what is even if they decide that these are now going to become professional football teams that essentially have some kind of a half-assed sponsorship from a school. I mean, what's other than, you know, some kind of, if we're not going to give the money to men's lacrosse or women's swimming anymore, our profits, other than stuff like that, who's even there to say no? I mean, who's there to say yes? I guess you could just do it, right?
What
I mean,
Tom, I'm not sure what you're asking.
I'm saying if 15 teams decide this is what we're going to do, we're going to investment and we're going to somehow be part of Alabama, but by the way, not really, and we're going to be kind of a pro team, is there anybody that says you can't do it or you can do it? I mean, there's no governing body, not that I'm saying there should be, that says, oh, no, you guys can't do that. I mean, the NCAA is useless. I mean, who is there another side?
I would think that not, and this wouldn't just be the SEC. This would be, you know, other college football conferences.
The reason why I'm using them is that's the one that Lou said was exploring it as of like yesterday.
Yeah, that they're hot on the trail, but so is the Big Ten. So, it's gaining traction. So I would imagine that they would create some kind of governing body, because one of the things that they're going to want to do is restrict player movement, you know, is restore some of what they used to have and that they used to enjoy very much so. But you have to have bargaining bodies involved in that. They can make up whatever rules they want, and maybe that'll work or maybe that won't, but ultimately they are likely to need some kind of collective bargaining agreement that talks about what the restrictions are for movement between teams, and whether there's going to be caps on payouts and all that kind of stuff that everybody loves, and they love it because it's going to make it more profitable. For years and years, and we have talked about this, God, you know, you started getting me on back in the O'Bannon case, the O'Bannon case. And it has always been a deal that strongly favored the colleges and restrained the ability of the athletes. And now they're finally getting their share of it, but it's also created a fair amount of chaos in the market that, frankly, a lot of fans don't like, but really, really, coaches and administrators hate. They're going to want to restore something there, but you have to have two parties who can bargain, and right now they don't have any parties who can bargain.
Well, you can have. All you have to do is if people become employees, every employee is in a union. I mean, if they have an employee, they can say, I'm going to sign you.
And your employees, that would be a model that I would think makes a lot of sense, or at least makes a lot of interim sense. But again, as employees, then we got to start employing, what implications might that have on being a not-for-profit operation?
Well, yeah,
there's a whole lot of shit that they get to do because they're not employees. And two is because they aren't technically operating.
I'm going to say that if it is no longer the University of Alabama or Notre Dame, and it's BlackRock / Alabama, and it's separate from the school, I don't see how any possibility those people cannot be employees.
Oh, I would agree with it then. Yeah,
and if they're employees,
to the extent that they like the status quo. The next step from the status quo is to make them employees.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to fish out with you. And by the way, you're helping a lot.
Stronger basis for enforcing contracts.
At some point here, you can't be on a swim team and stay dry. I mean, right? I mean, they're going to have to make a couple of these leaps that you're always talking about. There's no way that you break away from Title IX, you break away from all that other stuff, and say these people still aren't employees. But what relation do they even have to the school, for God's sake?
Agree, yeah. And, you mentioned Title IX. That even doesn't even get discussed in any of these things. But once you spin it off, you don't have to worry about it.
Well, so does for Notre Dame or for Alabama, it becomes essentially a stock dividend in their endowment portfolio. They're gonna get their $50 million from Notre Dame Football Inc.
I would think so, and maybe also collect on a lease for the stadium if they continue to own the stadium where they play, because you don't have to sell off that asset. The schools have all kinds of things in their stadiums. They do a lot of concerts and heck, different kind of events. Notre Dame, I don't know if they still do it, but they used to always have this big evangelical event in the summer that would fill the joint. I would imagine that they'd want to hang on to that asset and lease it out, and that would be a revenue stream for them as well.
I think, boy, there's going to be some tax guy that's going to be all over this. Say away. Go ahead, Carl.
I'm sure there already are, because if they're really seriously having these conversations, those are the questions that they're going to have to resolve.
Well, at the very least, if South Bend or Indiana has an amusement tax, they're going to have to pay that, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know if they're already paying that or not.
Do tickets have a sales tax too? Is there sales tax on the Irish tickets?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
I think there are. There isn't. Well, that's going to come, right?
Sure. That's what I mean. So you're gonna see all of this, because government will put its hands in the pockets as soon as it practically can. Right now, everybody's afraid that if I dip my hand too far into the pockets of the colleges, then I'm going to crimp state U's ability to win championships, and if I do that, then people won't vote for me.
Well, it's. Well, I mean, they're trying to do something for this stupid Bears deal. I mean, you got people sleeping on the sidewalks down there. You want to give those guys a 40-year tax deal? Give me a break. Nobody wants to be the mayor or the governor to lose a team. I was thinking on the way in, I should run this by Kevin and Carl, my two guys. What if we had a decent mayor, or anybody had a mayor with some balls, and I'm not saying... any mayor's really had balls when it comes to these teams. What if when the mayor met with, or the governor met with Goodell, he said, you know what? If this team moves to Indiana, we're going to form another team, and we're going to sue you guys for inclusion in the NFL under an antitrust exemption, because you can't just take somebody, because you're not willing to let somebody else in, have them beat up on all these municipalities, because you restrict entry into your league. I wonder. I think Goodell would poop his pants if he heard that.
Well, the question is, because they have done expansion franchises. So what is, I would look at it, from a legal standpoint, not being an attorney, but looking at from what I do know about business law, is that they can't be arbitrary in their exclusion. But that doesn't mean they can't be choosy in who they include and exclude.
Well, when they come up with another franchise... Well,
as they've gone through expansion, what is the rigor that goes into that? How do they determine who gets it and who doesn't? And from there, they would then do the same thing. If Chicago mayor were said, I'm going to expand here and you can't keep me out of the NFL.
Careful with their idea. You're talking about a monopoly expansion where the person coming in, the last time, I forget who the last team was, they paid like every other team $10 or $15 million a team. They paid for that franchise.
Oh, yeah, they did, but they also had to be approved. They had to... First of all, they had multiple locations looking for franchises, and they had multiple owners groups at each location looking for franchises. So the location has to get approved, and the ownership group has to get approved. In that regard, and that's all I'm saying is, you can't just say you have to include me, because there have been other cases where they said we'd like to be included and have been turned down.
Okay. So we're in two different.
The question is, what has been the basis for doing so? Is it defensible, and is it consistently applied? If it's not consistently applied and it's arbitrary, then you're going to have problems.
We're on two different levels of the chessboard. You're talking about under the current monopolistic system, how does the monopoly let somebody else into the group? I'm saying, hey, you got no business being a monopoly. If I want a football team and I want to join up, I don't have to pay you. I don't have to.
Okay. Like that means anything anywhere else in the economy.
I'm just saying. Nobody wants that opened up.
Well, okay. Yeah, because if you start going down that road, then we're gonna have to talk about some ones that have been around.
Well, like baseball,
screwing people. Oh, like baseball. How about hospitals?
Well, okay. I I have no problem going down as antitrust. But if I want to open up a saloon tomorrow, which I don't have to pay the guy down the block. I mean, this is so insane. I can't even go there. But
Chief, speaking of that sort of insanity, okay, and what happens when it gets blown up? This county, for a very long time, would not give you a package license unless you were a moonshine business.
A moonshine business?
Yeah. Now, interestingly
enough... You mean if you didn't make your own stuff?
Basically, one of the... Because there's a moonshine store on every corner here and has been forever. I mean, as long as I've been cognizant of it.
Define a moonshine, so we're talking about a saloon?
No, a distillery that of course it's not real moonshine because real white lightning, but I mean that's the historical context.
You have guys around here still making their own booze. Okay, I've never been down there. I don't know.
Well, they make the booze and it's their brand and but there's different kinds.
Is any good?
Yeah, actually, some of it is pretty good. So they all have tasting rooms. Come on in here, $5. These are, 10 little preacher cups of the different flavors and all of this, right? So, I mean, that's like one of the big things to do around here is they'll only let you in one time in each of them, and they scan your driver's license because the amount that they give you is not enough for you to become legally intoxicated. So what you do is hit four of them.
God.
Well, four different companies, four different, right? None of them know about the other three.
So it's like going to wine tasting in Napa, basically.
Well, sort of. Yeah. I mean, it's the same basic idea, right? So anyway, they had refused any kind, and the only exception to this is that there were package stores in Gatlinburg, because Gatlinburg is a home rule city, being an incorporated entity, they could basically tell the county government to go pound sand, and did. So if you wanted a bottle of Jack Daniels in Sevier County, the only place you could get it was in Gatlinburg. All right, because that obviously is not somebody's homegrown moonshine. Okay, now, during the crazy, I started...
Kevin, did you have any idea this was going on?
This is like classic stuff. Okay.
Oh,
so anyway, during the crazy, I was showing up at the county commission meetings and using my 3 minutes, right, on a fairly regular basis.
Oh, some of those recordings, they were fun.
Yeah, and so I was doing this, and part of any kind of adversarial process like this is you do a little bit of backstory investigation, and what I discovered was that one of the county commissioners was a part owner of one of the moonshine joints, which probably explains why they wouldn't give anybody a package store license. Well, finally, in the last couple of years, they got sued enough times by enough people with enough money that somebody broke the seal on that.
God.
And now... There are package stores going up, sprouting much like rabbits, and a couple of them are actually fairly decent. I mean, it used to be that if I wanted a bottle of something other than moonshine, I either had to go into Gatlinburg, which is a pain in the ass because of the traffic, or I had to go into Knox County, go across the county line into Knox, where they've got package stores like everyone else. But now there's a couple of them in the county, and there's several more that are going up, that are under construction.
So if you want to go out and get, if you want to drink rum and Coke, you want to get a fifth of rum, you got to drive somewhere else? Or you got to go to one of these places?
Well, you could get a quote-unquote rum that was from one of these moonshine joints.
Oh, really? Wow. That doesn't include wine and beer. You have wine and beer stores then, right?
Wine and beer stores are different, and the other oddity of this area, and this is actually statewide, is that alcoholic liquor by the glass is subject to what amounts to a doubled sales tax.
Okay.
So So
these are all blue laws, weren't they? That's what they used to call them.
Well, that's where it all started, right? But that's not a county thing. That's a statewide thing. So if you like to drink liquor in a bar, you do not want to live in this state because you're going to get pounded on the taxes every time you go really? Do it. Now it's not as bad if you're buying a bottle, but essentially it's a doubled sales tax. It's not assessed on beer. So there is the other thing that comes up is that the threshold, I don't remember exactly what it is. I think it's 9% ABV or something like that. Beyond the threshold, you will not find the breweries in this state that have beers that are beyond that threshold. And the reason is legally they're not beer and they're subject to the double tax along with being registered as a liquor producer.
With the... The thing last week or 2 weeks ago for the people from Fisher House that our friend Diane had at Revolution Brewery, one of the guys comes up, he comes back with his beer, and it's in a snifter glass. And I go, what the hell kind
of... Oh, yeah.
I go, what the hell kind of beer is that? He goes, well, that's... If it's over a certain percent of alcohol, you can't serve it in a beer glass. It's too much beer.
Right.
There
was a place down in Destin that had an Imperial Stout that they did not distribute. You had to go into their place to get it and drink it, and it was really good. And oh God, be careful!
Hey,
it's kind of like drinking cognac.
Well, real quick, and then we want to switch back to the market because, like I said, this is a stock picker's market. What was the movie with Michael Douglas where the guy was the he was the asshole, and then Robert Sheen was the guy running around on a motorcycle chasing, seeing where the mergers and acquisitions were coming from. What was the thing? Something somebody liked.
That lack of a better word, great is good.
Yeah, was it the what was the line? Somebody likes Blue Horseshoe or something. The name of the company or whatever. Anyway, so other than like following Trump's kids around on a little motorcycle right now, I mean, what are we doing to pick these stocks? I mean, there seems to be activity the day.
Drop off and let you guys run with that.
All right, but thanks, Kevin. Have a good weekend, buddy. What are we doing? I mean, talk about a stock picker. Is this we're selecting stocks that the government is going to make winners at least for a while, and they seem to be all valued 15, 20, 25, 30, 40% higher than they are now, which means if you've got one of them, you sure as hell don't want to be covered calls against it, but you also don't want to be in anybody else's industry. How do you know whether you're one of the chosen few or not?
You know, I don't know, Chief. But this is, and again, if this was happening in a market that didn't already have this level of outrageous chasing and froth, I would just look at this and say there's nothing to this other than rank corruption. Okay. Because I mean the pattern looks pretty obvious, doesn't it? Duh. The problem is that's not the world we're in today. And you know, we just got the BEA numbers, okay, the personal income and spend, okay, that just popped up yesterday. If that report didn't throw a bucket of ice over the top of the coals, I don't understand how it possibly could not, and yet it didn't. I there was a little bit of a blip when it came out, but in terms of actual impact from a market point of view, it was for all intents and purposes a non-event. Okay, Chief, it's lunacy. I'm looking at this.
I know, but what I mentioned earlier, I probably did not, as usual, I didn't say exactly what... If somebody called me today and said, gee, Trump and his gang of thieves is, you know, these 15 firms have showed up and dropped a bag of money in front of the guy, and they're pushing them in the Defense Department and God knows where else, Homeland Security and you name it. How do I judge, when something is announced, I know the stock is going to run up. How do I know how much it's actually worth to them, whether on the run-up I should sell it or buy it? I mean, there's still way more questions here than just, it's corrupt. I mean, I know that, but there's a price to corruption. There's like incredible corruption, and there's some that maybe, you know what I'm saying? It still makes it hard. It's like, to a certain extent, it's like any other contract somebody gets. I mean,
Of course it is. And again, I'm, as I said, the trying to evaluate this, first off, trying to get I don't get the phone call. All right, or the text message, or the WhatsApp, or
and plus, you know, if you did, you'd wonder, why did I get it? Is it really?
Am I beaks? Yeah. Right? Yeah, am I about to get beaked and thrown in a tank with a gorilla? That's the first thing. All right, if you didn't have enough of an indication that there was a serious problem. When Trump is buying NVIDIA stock as he's flying an Air Force One up to Alaska to pick up the CEO to go over to China. If that didn't set off your, what the F is going on here, Bell? I don't know what does, right? So that then you get this thing with these drones, and I'm like, oh, more of the same crap, right? But the real problem with all of this is that I think this is symptomatic. I don't think this is necessarily the whole story. I think the story is that we live in a world today when all I got to do is put the two letters AI in my earnings report, my stock goes up 40%. And it does this even when, on a cursory analysis, I spend $100 million and I lay off a whole crap ton of employees. And I still, my spend is still up $100 million, and I only see $10 million of income come from it. So I got a 90% burn. I'm literally lighting $100 bills on fire. All right, I mean, that's what the analysis says I'm doing. Literally lighting $100 bills on fire, which looks like the stupidest possible thing that a business could do, and my stock was up 40%.
Well, I mean, how much of this, I'm just going to rob these numbers out there, but... because we'll talk about it after the break. I went through yesterday. I sent it to you guys, the money supply numbers.
Yeah,
they're friggin' appalling. I mean, in terms
and guess what? A lot of that's going into margin.
Well, that's what I was saying, and I can't wait to talk to Hal. And again, we can't. When you talk about what I found last month, if you look at the money supply increase and look at last month annually, it's almost 12%. Now, if you take the 2 months, because the last month was kind of a pause on this, it's like 5.7 annually. But if you take the last 3 months, it's 6.7. Any shred of doing anything for inflation is crazy here. But when you look at the balance sheet, and we had this discussion, was it you the other, about can you, the way our system is set up, the U.S. banking system, people can create or not create money. If I find $100,000 under a, I'm going to go back to when we had a 20% retention, which we don't anymore, a reserve requirement. If I found $100,000 under my mattress and I put it in the bank, okay, the money supply just goes up by $100,000 because now there's money there that it was still in circulation, but nobody had circulated it, you know, till I found it under the mattress in the new house I just bought, right? So technically it still was in circulation because it was money, but let's say I now put it in the bank, okay? And all of a sudden now Carl winders in, it gets an $80,000 loan, and then puts that in another deposit account. Well, now we just created $80,000 in the terms of money supply. And if somebody else comes in, they can borrow 64, 80 minus 20, and they can put it in a bank account. Well, now there's 100, there's 80, and there's 64 that are counted as cash. Well, the 100 was counted as cash before, even though it was cash. But now there's 80 and 64 that essentially have come not necessarily out of thin air, but they are funds that are available. Okay, so whenever you see the stock market go up, like if I say something like, gee, Micron just went up $200 billion in market cap in one day. Well, that means if all that Micron was at PTI, there's now $200 million in equity that somebody could borrow against.
That's right.
And oh, by the way, you could go buy $400 billion worth of stock, and we'll right. lend you $200 billion, which now becomes somebody else's bank account. So when you say the Fed allowed the money, they didn't exactly push the money supply up. they failed in draining enough out to keep it at a certain rate. So sometimes they sometimes they have to put money in. If they say, I want a 2% money supply growth, because that's what population is or something like that, sometimes if the market's, if the pool is contracting a little, they may have to add money to the pool. But if the pool is expanding more than they want to, it's their job to pull it out. So right now they're not pulling it out.
But, Chief, realize what you have going on in this mania right now, and this is where the real danger comes from. As I was talking about earlier, I've never seen one, not even one instance of a computer thing operate out of scope. That's why that Tesla drove underneath the the trailer. Okay, never seen it happen yet. You and I do it every single day.
Well, okay, but so,
Well, now hold on a minute.
But the money, like Cal talks about, is coming too easy to them. How did they get to blow $5 billion?
Chief, I get that. Yeah. Here's the problem. The response in corporate America to this, in the large companies, is to do two things. One is to fire Americans and allegedly replace them with these computers, which actually cannot think out of scope. They cannot do it. It's impossible. And secondly, to cover the operating of these things, they're either completely offshoring the work to places like India, or they're bringing the Indians in here, many of whom do not actually have the credentials they claim to have. It's a fraud. And the problem with this is that at the same time, we've got kids going in to get a computer engineering degree that are 100 grand in the hole. These people come in here, they're zero in the hole. They don't have it. They don't have that problem, all right? And on top of that, their standard of living coming in here, even if they're working for $50,000 or $60,000 a year or $100,000 a year, the kid that just came out of college here has to have $150,000 salary in order to have the same lifestyle that guy has because of that embedded debt he was forced to take on. Now, this is all inuring to people's corporate balance sheets.
Why don't you find your way back onto, like, some national radio? Oh, I'll go with you, or national TV.
They won't have... I've been
I know
that, bring this stuff up.
I know they're getting more selective.
Gee, that's what you're saying.
But what if you got out there, because you have more cachet than me, what if you got out there and said, I got my AI thing going here, and it looks to me like we don't have to pay these executives $20 million. AI could do it for $100,000. Where do you think that one goes?
Well, probably about as... it would probably get me as invited as saying that all these bankers that knowingly sold bogus BS mortgage paper need to be rotting in prison for the next 20 years.
God.
Well, that's how I got blackballed.
how come nobody ever... There's never anything that will cut down the pay of the CEO. That's always going up. If I get rid of all the other people because of this AI, then I get to keep that dough. But what about if we get rid of you?
Well, okay, but what happens when your actual capacity to ship product goes in the toilet? All right, and if you think about the stuff that's going on with these forced subscriptions. Okay, Amazon's done this to people with the Kindles. Adobe is kind of the king of it in the desktop software world. You think about what's happened here. I have about 300 DVD and Blu-ray movies here at the house. All right, so I own those. I paid for them. I can watch Star Wars as many times as I want. All right, now let's say that you're an evil CEO and you want me to buy a subscription to, say, Office 365, okay? Well, how do you actually do that if my current copy of Word and Excel does everything I need it to do? There isn't anything you can entice me to purchase other than actually innovating and producing something better that I would think, okay, you know, I'll pay for that because it's better. So what you do is you turn around and you, when I bought this thing, the agreement I made with you as the producer was that I can load this on multiple computers. So I can have one on my desktop, I can have it on my laptop, but I can only use it on one computer at a time. Now, that's an entirely reasonable thing because I'm one human being, right? And I bought one copy. So you have a license verification server that is just there for the purpose of making sure that I don't try to run it on 10 computers. I don't buy one copy and put it on all 10 of my people's desks, right? Which, by the way, people will do.
Well, that's what China did to Microsoft for...
Well, exactly. You know, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what you'll do if there's no enforcement mechanism, right? So this is a reasonable enforcement mechanism. All right, now you decide that you want to steal the value I gave you and force me to buy your software license, your subscription. So what you do is you shut the verification server off. And now... when I go to start up my word processor, it says, oh, you're not licensed. Yes, I am. I bought it on a perpetual basis. Oh, you're not licensed. Tough shit.
Oh, yeah.
I've had this happen to me with Adobe's products. I had it happen with a CAD/CAM product called a Libra. And there's this is outright theft. And nobody goes to jail for this kind of thing. These are, in many cases, these are now forced purchases. There's an announcement that just came out that if you have a Mac and you have bought Office, Microsoft's, you know, Office product, right? And your Mac is old enough that it can't get the current versions of the operating system, which there's an awful lot of Macs out there that are essentially stranded capital in that regard, in that they've got older processors.
Well, what about Windows 10? And same thing.
Well,
right?
The same kind of thing going on with Windows 10, okay? Although I don't think in this case it applies to Windows 10, but it does to the Macs. And I saw the announcement on this the other day. Within like the next month or so, you're going to have to upgrade your hardware, or your software that you bought isn't going to work, because the license verification server, they've changed the root certificates, and those are in your operating system, and they're too old.
Well, if you have, I'm not as up on this as you are, but if you have Excel and some of these things, they'll tell you if you don't get a new computer, it's not working.
Well, but that's precisely what I'm talking about,
yeah.
Okay? So now there's nothing wrong with your computer, all right? Your machine works just fine. It's perfectly suitable for your purposes. Maybe you do spreadsheets and you write some letters, and that, I mean, you know, and browse the internet. Those are the three things you do with that.
That's about what I do. Hey, we got to go to break, but SP Futures up. We don't have much going on here, but SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures down $1. I'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up big stocks and jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 675, NASDAQ Futures up 175. So individual stocks moving. The big mover is Dell, up $116, as they got some huge deal from the Defense Department after courting Donald Trump for the last year and a half. So that's part of that. He also ponied up some money for the Trump for Kids IRAs or whatever that stuff is, and he did some other stuff. Come to Caesar and Caesar gives back, it appears. I don't think Caesar would have done this, but then again, I can't exactly ask him. DAX up 12, I'll call that flat. FTSE up 18, yeah, pretty flat too. Kick around a little bit of a movement, up 51.6. So every morning I hear about this Iran ceasefire exemption. Yesterday I listened to a YouTube video and some lady was ranting and raving about how, for God's sake, you're the one who got the thing closed. Now everybody's supposed to cheer when you try and get it back open again, but at whatever. I mean, that's obviously a shallow look at it, but it's not so wrong, actually. Over in Asia, and this is, we'll talk to Hal a little bit about this, with the idea that everybody's convinced that the oil price is up this high, even though they're down some, is burying Japan. Yet the markets are at all-time highs. So this has to do with this money supply stuff we're talking about. If you pump enough money in there, I mean, Argentina they buried their company, country, and the stock market went straight up with all the invasion. Nikkei's up 1,600. All right. South Korea's KOSPI, Japan's TOPIX reach new peaks as investors shrug off Iran tensions. There's nothing to do. The Bank of Japan putting money in the system, evidently. Hang Seng up 176.7%. Shanghai down 30.7%. Bonds, 10 years down a base point, 4.44. These guys must be buying some of this stuff because with all this money supply coming in like this, most people think our inflation's on the way, but evidently they're buying enough to where they're making it not so. Oil down $1.22.87.68. Brent down $1.49.92.22. RBOB down 3 cents, 3.15. So I'm saying gas prices should be in the low fours, maybe four, maybe a little under four, pretty soon at this number, as opposed to the much higher than that. Gold up $19, $45.52. Silver down 30 cents, $75.60. Foreign exchange, this is one you have to watch on the Japan side. 160 is kind of their panic number, just under that at 159.27. British pound is up a little bit, 116.45, kind of where it has been. Crypto, which has been getting smacked, got another 210 today, 73,147. Ricky, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs win.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:40 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 56 degrees right now with a high of 75. Pleasant with plenty of sunshine today. Tonight will be clear with a low of 58 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 70 degrees right now with a high of 88. Lots of sunshine as well. And tonight, crystal clear skies and a low of 67 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, 15 minutes. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 29 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf is 29 minutes as well. We're looking at 32 minutes. Then Ryan from 95th. And lastly, inbound Stevenson from 24 is 33 minutes. For the MLB, White Sox beat Twins yesterday 6-2 and Cubs beat Pirates 7-2. Today we got Cubs at Cardinals at 6:15, Tigers at White Sox at 6:40, and Diamondbacks at Mariners at 9:10 p.m. For the NHL, we got Canadians visiting Hurricanes tonight at 7 p.m. for Game 5 of Eastern Conference Finals. Carolina has the series lead 3-1. And lastly, for the NBA, yesterday Spurs dominated Thunder 118-91 and tied the series once again on Game 6 of Western Conference Finals. Game 7 is tomorrow night at 7 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
The Carl, these inflation numbers especially, I mean, you see the thing going on in Japan, and this is... I mean, I don't expect anybody to go look at some of this stuff, but look at the Weimar Republic, look at Turkey, look at... We're doing the same thing with the same winners, and we have somebody in the White House who benefits by all this, him and his family and his friends, and by pouring money in, they are the winners, okay? If you have any kind of debt, say on Doral or someplace, all of a sudden that debt becomes less and less as you inflate things. And by the way, the government now is going to be paying people back. If you had a 30-year bond, it's just, which would be what, 1995. If you were foolish enough to buy that bond, then what do you think they're paying you back in, Carl? In terms of
What's
it worth in the 1995 dollars? 40 cents? 50?
You know, you certainly have lost value, right? I don't think there's a lot of question there.
What? Why? I know that, you know, I'm maturing, shall we say, and I was around when this happened the first time. This is a serious enough issue. Why is it that other than the other people on the show, nobody has any idea what I'm talking about? Well, how do they manage to gloss this over to such a huge extent? Why aren't people pissed off about it?
I don't know, and there's another piece of this. If you look at the front month oil contract with the stuff that's going on in Iran, right? And it's down quite a lot, right? And, you know, QM's trading 87.77 right now. There's a problem with this, as I pointed out when this whole thing started, which is that we have a pretty good idea what this does from the standpoint of both inflationary pressure and supply chain problems, because the same sort of thing happened in 1974. Right. Now, it wasn't from the same exact cause. We weren't blowing people up. But, that, you know, the embargo was basically that, right? Essentially.
But we were already pushing it from 68.
I get that. But it essentially was a stoppage of shipments out of that part of the world for 5 months. Okay, that's what the embargo was. The reason it stops doesn't really matter so much from a supply chain standpoint. I mean, we can argue the politics of that, you know, whether or not we ought to be fighting over there or whatever.
Yeah, but the thing we're not, we will both agree on is if somebody looks back at that, and you interviewed 1,000 people that have any idea what we're talking about, every one of them is going to say the oil embargo, and not one of them is going to say Nixon pouring money in to pay for the Vietnam War. Nobody will say that.
Well, exactly. Okay. But here's the problem with that. The impact of that and the dislocation in the economy that it produced, which had as its precursor, the same sort of precursor that we had this time, right? Throwing money into the system. The impact of that went on for 8 years. 8 years.
Probably more.
You can argue that it was 1982 before... I mean, because Reagan got drugged. Well,
but if you're talking about the market, it was 82.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, but there's other. The market wasn't as big a part of the thing back then because nobody had 401ks, nobody had IRAs.
Yeah, but you know, there you go. So here's the thing that you have to listen to though. The U.S. oil producing companies, right? So let's just pick on one, Exxon, right? A lot of the stations around the gas stations around the United States are Exxon stations. All right, we got one here.
Yep.
They have come out and said this is this problem is essentially a prompt critical issue because the supply has been disrupted now. Since the end of February, okay.
Well, it's not that our supply has been disrupted; we're selling it.
I get that.
Yeah.
But the point is, 3 months. Okay. So all the ships that were in transit when this started, they still showed up at the terminals and discharged their cargoes because they were making the passage at the time. They were outside the strait. They had loaded their cargo and they were doing their thing. All right. It takes time for them to get there. Now they're empty. Okay. If you reopen the thing today, they have to get back over there and start running cargoes.
Well, again. Not to mention the places that offload the oil got to...
Well, some of them got pasted. Right.
Well, not only that, some of them turn the wells off. You don't just turn them back on.
Well, anybody that believes that these guys just shut it off and didn't slow walk everything as soon as it started.
I'm sure they did it right, but
I mean they've got engineers. Okay, they're not completely stupid, but even so, I mean there's certainly some there's going to be disruption there longer term. But the reality of it is just taking that out of the picture. In another month or two, you are going to have the storage, the buffering, which is always there in a system that has long lead on the supply chains. That buffering is going to get extremely tight. Now, on what planet? You know, you just said before break, prices should be coming down given where oil is, right? And if I look at the RB contract, it is come down a lot.
Yeah.
All right. The problem is when I run out of supply, when I run out of buffer tankage into the refinery, I have to shut the refinery down because I don't have anything to feed it with. In order to avoid that refinery being damaged, I have to do that through a closeout procedure, and it takes time. It's not just something that you turn off a switch. It doesn't work like that, all right? Secondly, there are because of the amount of heat and pressure and the thermal stresses and stuff on things like this, in many cases when you do this, you then have to go through entire
procedure. If you shut down one that does heavy oil, You got to tear the pipes out.
Well, not if you do it in a planned fashion.
Not if you keep them all heated. But how long you do that?
Well, but not if you do it in a planned fashion. Okay? Yeah. Which is what I'm saying is that there is a procedure and a way to do this, right?
Well, when the power went out with the hurricane, they just had to tear the pipes out.
Well, because that's unplanned. Okay, but I'm saying there is a way to do that. But once these things are shut down and the pressure is relieved and all of that, you don't just turn around and turn them back on. There's a whole bunch of checks and tests that have to be run first, because otherwise you turn it on, it might explode. So you have to make these things are not designed to be cycled up and down on a daily kind of basis. That's not how they work. And what the folks from Exxon are saying is that we are, it doesn't matter if this thing's settled today, we are going to take that dislocation and that disruption and price, simply due to supply constriction, is going to respond to that, and that in turn is going to produce demand destruction. Well, demand destruction comes from economic damage, severe economic
damage. Which is happening all over the place.
Which is already starting. But what they're saying is you have not even seen the leading edge of it yet.
Two things I want to add, and I want to talk about some of the, if there is such a thing, the moralities of this, because obviously with these stocks and with these contracts and stuff, we have people that I think have, well, I don't want anybody picking winners and losers. That's the whole idea of having a competitive system, in which we don't really have anymore. And if I know you've weaned away from ever doing this, Carl, but if I get one more right winger telling me, well, socialism is worth, I don't know that it is. Then this current thing we got, I mean, I am no fan of socialism, you know that, by being a trader on the floor. But anyway, but two things I want to add to that. And you might be the only person who knows the answer to this. What is the single biggest inventory depositor of gasoline in this country?
No, I don't know that answer.
Sure you do. Everybody's car.
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
On average.
Right, I've got on average or whatever. Yeah.
Well, it's like half. Everybody has like half a tank. And there's like how many bazillion cars in this country?
Right.
And if all of a sudden prices go, if all of a sudden people think there's a shortage, and they all run out and fill up, we never have enough in the pipeline to fill up everybody's car.
Just take a look at what happens when there's a hurricane coming. Yeah, crying out loud. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, I think right now, because everybody's got this idea from our fine president that every day it's one more day that we're going to be, the strait's going to open tomorrow, and by Sunday it's going to be down to $2 again or whatever the hell. I think people are running lean in their tank instead of being 50% full. I'll bet we're averaging 30 or 40.
Yeah, you know, I think you're probably right about that. And one of the things, but the impact of this, and just as an example, this is a very tourist-heavy area, okay? Now, not in my immediate neighborhood, but, you know, Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg, yeah, hello. Last evening, myself and a friend, we went to a place to have a beer and a bite that we would never, at this time of year, on a Thursday, we'd never even contemplate doing that, because you'd be sitting in traffic for 45 minutes.
Well, it's all...
There was absolutely nobody on the road here.
But, Carl, what is one of the main, if there is such a main thing of all of our jousting and arguing and stuff on the show, is that we're trying to get information to people that they don't normally get, and why they don't get it, I don't know. I must have heard last weekend how many gazillion times, and it's a lot, because Wad and I were driving around, we went to the Memorial Cemetery and all that stuff, but how many, even with the gas prices, everybody, you know, how many 49 million people are on the road?
Oh, yeah.
And I sit there and go, okay, wait a minute. God help you if you'd have turned that paper in the University of Chicago. Wait a minute. Have you sampled everybody to find out that last year they went to Mount Rushmore and this year they're going to Blue Island? they're on the road, but is it the same trip, you idiot? Is everybody cut back?
Well, exactly.
You know, I mean, and then you have, you know, we have a president. I know everybody's gotten to the point where they don't pay any attention to him, to where it's, you know, it's okay, I guess. But when you have somebody come out and say, we don't care about the oil. I remember this, you know, whenever I listen to it again, we don't care about the oil. We don't care if the strait is open because we're self-sufficient. oh, by the way, people can come buy it from us. And I sit there and go,
well, at what price?
Yeah, he can't be that stupid. I mean, obviously, if we sell other people 30% of what we drill every day, then we're not self-sufficient. I mean, how do people listen to this and not go, wait a minute, what did he just say?
So, well, it's, I'll tell you what, though, Chief, not everybody is as dumb as you think on this, okay?
I'm sure people aren't. Sure. I'm talking about the people on TV. Immediately, you don't say, wait a minute, how can that possibly equal?
Well, no, but that's the thing. I know they're not because, I hang out with people, from time to time, duh, right?
Yeah.
And I've pointed this out. I said, if we had a president who actually was the smartest man on the planet, which is what he tries to claim he is, right? That's his shtick. Is I'm just I'm smart, you're dumb. I'm big, you're small. Matilda, hello. The first thing he would have done is slam the door and say absolutely no energy related exports are leaving until this is over.
But now that gets back to where I'm trying to lead on this
question. But the problem is then his buddies don't make any money.
Well, that's my point. You just gave me my answer. But I mean, okay, so now you and I are capable, I think, and a lot of listeners are. That's why they listen to us. You and I are capable of sitting there, okay, if you just slam every kind of export, which is hard to do because we actually import from some places and export to other places.
I didn't say it was easy.
But if all of a sudden you were to say, we're not exporting any, or if we say, we're going to be able to export diesel, so diesel here goes to $6, but oh, by the way, we should know the 15 companies that are going to be exporting the diesel. Is it his buddy that just bought the refineries and on the Gulf? Whatever.
Right.
Every time we do something like this, there's a winner and a loser. And I don't necessarily know that people always put two and two together. I mean,
no. Well, Chief, I'll tell you what. When it comes to the stuff that was going on with the oil futures contracts and stuff, they absolutely don't. Okay, because I've educated several people about this. I said, you realize that in the stock market, to some extent, because in some cases it's foregone profit as opposed to a loss. Okay, if I sell you my IBM at 100 and it goes to 150. I didn't actually lose $50. I lost the opportunity cost of $50.
Right.
If I'd kept it, I'd have the 50. But you got it because I sold it to you. But I didn't actually take a $50 loss as a consequence of this.
But you always mention it, and accurately regarding some of the initiatives of the Biden administration.
If you happen to be in this, it's
one thing, and I'm a guy that always thinks that as we, 100 years from now, we're going to find more and more ways to come up with some energy that probably are not fossil fuel. That doesn't mean that tomorrow I want to give Elon Musk $1,000 when I go buy a truck. We're way too soon for that. This is insanity. I'm with you on it. But over time, I think that renewable energy probably makes sense in a lot of areas. I mean, I'm saying there is some. If I could put a little bit of something on my roof and fill up my golf cart and use it on the golf course a block from my house, guess what? I mean,
all right.
But, you know, I'm saying at some level, I think that some of it, I mean, if I'm baking my ass off in northern Arizona, I'm going to find a way to use some solar.
I understand that. The problem is the destabilization of the market in general, and the fact that essentially these are looting operations in today's world.
I'm trying my best to agree with you.
The different problem.
Yeah, I'm trying my best to agree with you.
But here is what I think needs to be understood on a larger scale level, which is that today the market is running on. Essentially, it's running on tulip colors, okay? Ignoring the fact that the supply chain disruption that took place when we decided to get involved in this Iranian thing is not evadable. It is going to come through the economy.
It's already coming
through the economy. And it's in the data, and yet it's being completely ignored right now.
I absolutely do not disagree with that. But I get interesting stuff from listeners. And actually, one of the ladies, because I had mentioned her on the air the other day, she's involved. She's from the South. How the hell she found out about this show? I have no idea. And she's somehow involved with some church school and blah, blah, blah. And they decided they were going to remodel some of the classrooms, make them a little bigger or whatever. Right. And they had done something, you know, like this 15 years ago. And they figured, okay, it's gonna cost like this plus a little.
And then she actually went and got a quote.
Let's just say the rude shock. It's like, what are you talking about? Plus the guy can't even start in time to get it done. He's busy. It's like, right. I mean, which is even more bizarre. Okay, you would think you'd have five guys piled in at that price. They can't find anybody. I mean, I'm not going to go into whether they used to be Hispanic. I don't think so. I don't think it has anything to do with it. But all of a sudden, you can't find anybody. And by the way, it's twice as expensive as you. I mean, there's stuff that's buried. Anybody who's lucky enough, well, me yeah. too, to not go and get a stitch in an emergency room in the last 2 years, don't go. You know, if you're going to get a $5,000 bill, for God's sake. I mean, you know, maybe not that much, but there's stuff. If you don't have a... If you haven't bought a roof in 20 years and you still think a roof is $1,500, buddy, I hope you must think I'm underweight. I mean, we're looking at me, you know. I mean, what are you thinking? I mean, it's already there. But the thing,
yeah.
When you mentioned it's the same thing as happened in the 70s.
Except it's worse, okay, because the magnitude is far worse.
I have a specific question. Why in that era? And I think it has to do with the Fed buying stuff, but I'm not exactly sure. And I should know this. I'm supposed to be a monetarist. Why back then the market did not balloon up? Because interest rates ballooned up and the market went down. Right. Now it's a totally different story, and I think it has to do with the Fed essentially buying all the long-term paper and putting it on the balance sheet and making people think that interest rates aren't going up. Right now, We really have negative interest rates in this country and have had for a long time.
Yeah, we have. Well, as I've posted the chart on that, since the 2008 crash, in real terms, yeah. rates have been negative.
Right. And
there has not been any period of time post that time that's not been true. Now, that's ridiculously stupid.
Well, it isn't if you can borrow there.
Well, I'm saying... All right, so yeah, you're right in that if I'm Goldman Sachs, I love every second of this. If I'm any of the primary dealers,
yeah.
I am literally being... I've been given a machine gun that I can point at everybody else in the economy and force them to pay me.
Right, and but the morality, because we got a dash here, but the morality becomes so... I don't know. I mean... Somebody could call us up and say, Chief, you've been ragging about this stadium, and all the people on the show agree with you. How about I give you assholes at Stocks and Jacks two beer stands at the new stadium if you shut up? You know, I mean I don't think I would take that deal. Matter of fact, I never have, which is why I guess I'm not a 1%er. But I never would. But, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if we have any clients like this, but there are people... that don't like the fact that maybe Trump is picking winners, but if all of a sudden you've owned IBM stock your whole life and now it's up 30% on you this week, I don't know how pissed off you really are. I mean, are enough people getting essentially bought off to where we don't care about the morals anymore, or what are we doing here? You know, there's not going to be somebody that says that this is I own Dell and this is an outrage. I think most people own Dell thinking they're smart right now.
Chief, nobody cares until it goes the other way.
Well, right.
Okay, but the idea that all these people have that's not going to happen, yes, it is.
Last question, because we have a lot of the stock here. Is Microsoft next? They were up $12 yesterday and up another $7 today.
Well, Microsoft, as I pointed out, is you know, is basically riding this level of stupidity. And oh, by the way, they burned through their outside AI budget and have essentially told everybody to cut it out.
The question was more like, are they dropping the cash off at the White House this week?
I don't know if they are or they aren't, but I have no clue on that.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm not going to play.
I'm asking you because I got a few calls out there. Should I drag him in?
I'm not playing this game And the reason I'm not playing it is because I know what's going to happen when it when it comes to an end. I do not know when. And the other problem is I don't have anybody that's giving me that inside baseball.
Well, you can just stay long and keep dragging the puts up. And every time the stock's up $10, roll your puts up $8. That's what we're doing.
Well, you know, it's a nice concept. I'm just...
Well, that's why you want us to do it, because we're good at it. But it's pretty damn not easy. And by the way, you're paying for them. They're expensive.
I was going to say, the problem with doing that is that you're paying when that premium stops covering...
Yeah,
you stop being covered
without a doubt.
The increase.
Every other time we've had a huge market top, the VIX was very low. In 2007, PTI Securities was Money Manager of the Year, for God's sake, for Morningstar. Because the puts were so cheap, I bought extra ones.
Yeah.
I mean, but now they're not.
I'm just...
You pay to play, boy, right now.
That's exactly the problem, is that I look at this and I'm like, okay, if I want to do that, if I want to essentially... I'm going to buy Microsoft stock, and then I'm going to buy the put to protect it, right? Well, the only way I can mitigate the ridiculous expense of that put is to do a spread.
Yeah, or just sell a call. And if you say stock's going to be up $100, you don't want to sell the call.
Or I can go ahead and I can buy one and sell one below it. Right, to mitigate it, but now I'm only protected in that box.
That doesn't get you anywhere if it's this high.
Well, and if
there are times
up,
when you could do that, but boy.
But if it blows up, it doesn't help me either, right?
Well, okay, because Micron's...
It doesn't go down 10%, it goes down 25%.
Micron's trading 950. Stock was just like 400. I guess you could buy the 950, 900 put spread and say you're covered, but who's to say it can only go to 900?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, what happens if it goes to 7?
Yeah, well, then you got a problem. Carl, have a nice weekend, buddy. We'll talk at you on Tuesday. S&P futures up 10, NASDAQ futures up 49, up again. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.